These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you've got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
So welcome to Tuesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here in the WGN radio studios, high above the Chicago River on this beautiful summer afternoon. John Najarian is on a phone line. We'll get a check of Wall Street. A little bit later in the program, we'll go to Boulder, the University of Colorado, where there's a study out on sexual harassment in the workplace. And the numbers very encouraging in one way. They actually are down quite a bit. We will talk with Stephanie Johnson about that. Seamus Toomey from the Block Club Chicago comes by. He's the editor-in-chief there. We'll hit the neighborhoods to see what's happening when it comes to new businesses. But we start on Tuesdays with CNBC's John Najarian on a phone line now. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Great to be with you, Stephen.
Thank you, sir. In earnings season, 18% of the S&P 500 have reported. 78% of those have beat expectations. I think that's a little down from early in the season when we talked last week. But overall, I think things look like they're going pretty well.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were discussing on the show today, is whether or not we were actually experiencing an earnings trough or whether it was actually better than expected. And certainly the Fed has been a little worried about that because obviously quarterly reports, that's each of these are 90 days apart. So if you start seeing weakness, you got to react proactively. At least that's what the Fed's been thinking, and that's why they're likely to move next week. Well, but the data so far looks good.
I was going to say, it seems like for the past couple of quarters at least, there have been predictions that things were going to start to slow down, and that just hasn't come true.
Right, exactly. I mean, I would point to three, I think, very bullish signs today. One is Carvana. These guys actually even have a vending machine for cars, but they're, of course, an auto dealer. The other is AutoNation. Sales were up. The stock is up double digits today, although they were selling a lot more used vehicles than new vehicles at this time. But that still meant that they were posting up nice profits. And Polaris, PII, the guys that make everything from snowmobiles to jet skis to garden tractors and so forth, they had extraordinarily good numbers despite tariffs. So that's all pretty bullish.
I was going to say, too, and Polaris making things that we don't really need, making things that we want.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. It's disposable, or that extra spend, not right. Disposable really, but it's more of a durable
frivolous.
Good rather than...
Let's just say frivolous.
Yeah. Let's say that.
Coca-Cola is up. That's lifting the Dow. United Technologies as well. The CEO of Coke was talking about the fact that he thought there might have been dark clouds in the future, I think the quote was, but the storm never really developed. So you've got that on one hand. The IMF is downgrading its forecast a bit for growth for the year. So how do you see the global economy through the rest of the year?
Well, I think an awful lot of it will depend on two major flashpoints. One is us and how we deal with China. And whether or not we strike a deal, I believe we will. I could go on for hours because I've done lectures on this as far as why China is losing the trade war, because their stock market was down 27% last year. Retail sales are down. All of the economic indicators are at multi-decade lows in China. That's not going to be good if it continues. And one way they can solve that, of course, is to come to a trade deal with the U.S. The other, Stephen, is Great Britain with the Brexit,
yeah,
and exactly how ugly that might get. Boris Johnson, who, of course, was elected today as the head of his party, the Tories that are in power right now, makes him the prime minister. He is definitely one of those hardline Brexiteers. So I think Europe is more likely to negotiate with him than they were with Theresa May, because she didn't have the credible threat that she would take it all the way, even if it's a hard Brexit. He has said over and over again, Mr. Johnson, that I will take this thing off the cliff in a hard Brexit if you guys don't deal with us, and Europe doesn't want that.
Yeah, friends of the show, listeners of the show will know I have a friend who's an MP, a conservative, Steve Brine from Winchester, and he's come on a few times to sort of sort Brexit through. He was a Jeremy Hunt guy, so I've been emailing with him back and forth a little bit today. Not the best day for him. Well, I think they expected it. So you think, though, that Boris Johnson becoming the PM could be good in that at least this Brexit thing will get settled?
Yeah, because like I say, anytime you basically hold somebody hostage, they have to believe you're going to go through with whatever your threat is, or they're not going to deal with you. And Theresa May was a lovely person, but she was not able to be convincing in that she would push this thing no matter what. Boris Johnson, people really believe that he will push this, and if he'll basically just walk on October 31st if they're not, if they won't negotiate with him and strike a deal.
And one of the things I wanted to ask you about, it's not really a today on Wall Street, maybe it is today, but yesterday there was a story about Lynette, the company I don't know much about, but that it shot up 40%. And the headline was at the time that nobody could figure out why. That sort of piqued my interest. Do you know what was going on there?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Okay.
It wasn't one of them that I was trading. And I guess in a way it's a good thing because since I haven't been familiar with that situation, it's not really good to jump into those if you're not familiar with exactly what the catalyst might be for a move of that sort.
The other thing then, Beyond Meat will report, I think, what, later in the week. They expect, maybe next week, they expect there to be a drop in revenue. But Beyond Meat stock is today at an all-time high. Explain that for me.
Well, this is one where there's the Impossible Burger and, you know, various competitors that offer things that they say are competitive with Beyond Meat. But Beyond Meat is extremely popular with people who have grown to want it, and or companies even like White Castle and
right.
McDonald's that have looked at putting out meats with those plant-based meats instead of animal-based meats. And they just can't make enough of it. It's a happy problem for them. And I certainly can't believe that this one has come from the $20 a share mark to 200, but it has. And I don't know what stops it given the demand and the growth that they're seeing right now.
You know, I bet there's a great book or at least a marketing story behind Beyond Meat, because you're right, there are other companies out there, but Beyond Meat has got these meat companies fighting over each other in order to get the
yep.
product on the shelf. They've just done a remarkable job that way.
They sure have. It's been marketed fantastically, and I think an awful lot of us are willing to try.
People want to try it. You know,
I've had it.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
No, I've had it, too.
I don't know that I'll switch from steak, but it's not bad as a replacement for other meals.
I mean, they have made it so that people are dying to go try it. It's just a remarkable story. Okay, so that's Beyond Meat. What are you watching today?
All right. We had several energy stocks that were on our list. One of them is CPE. That is Kowloon Petroleum, and we were buying CPE for clients again today.
John Najarian, thanks very much. I know Chipotle, my buddies at Chipotle are reporting after the bell. So
earnings after the bell, and Snap, too.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Watch both of those.
All right. We'll talk again soon. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right. Here we are in 2019. The Me Too movement is 3 years old now? They've been looking at some of the numbers and seeing if there's been an impact. Stephanie Johnson joins us now, an associate professor at the University of Colorado Boulder. Stephanie, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Do we have a start date for the Me Too movement? Where do you put it at 2016, 2015?
I would say it really started in October of 2017.
17, okay.
Although the broader women's movement, like the big women's march, was November 2016. So, the bigger women's movement, I would say, started in 2016, but the actual hashtag MeToo was in 2017.
Okay, so we've got the 2 years coming up on it. You have been looking at some numbers, starting with research. I think you interviewed 500 women in 2016 and then followed that up with another survey in 2018. And the numbers when it comes to sexual harassment are they're pretty encouraging.
Yeah, I'd say. So in two of the three aspects of sexual harassment that we measured, which are unwanted sexual attention and sexual coercion, have significantly decreased over that time. But then kind of for the bad news is gender harassment, which is also an aspect of sexual harassment, has actually increased significantly.
All right, so the numbers when it comes to sexual harassment or unwanted sexual attention in 2016, the number was 66%, and then to 2018, that drops to 25%. Quite a dramatic drop there. And then you just mentioned gender harassment. I'm not sure I understand what that is, so explain what gender harassment is for me.
Yeah, for sure. So that's just more of sexist comments or general hostility toward women or toward anyone on the basis of their gender, I suppose.
And so, I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
In our case, we just measured women.
And so, but that's an increase, you're saying, and the paper seems to say that the Me Too movement might have prompted that increase. Can you explain that for me?
Yeah, so it seems to me, and from the women we interviewed, that there's a sort of backlash effect. You know, everyone's more aware of sexual harassment as an issue. Organizations are taking it more seriously. People are behaving in ways that are less sexually harassing to women. But as a result, maybe that creates a little bit of added backlash, I guess, for in response to the Me Too movement. So there's like a hostility, and the women we interviewed really seem to say that they were witnessing this hostility where maybe men are saying, okay, so I can't Me Too you. Don't worry, I'm not going to sexually harass you. But then as a result, they're like, but I don't want to be in a room with you or have dinner with you, or, you know, women are so sensitive, those kind of negative comments are increasing.
Okay, so Stephanie, let me give you the terrible, embarrassing example of something I did today, and I hope this wasn't an offense. Maybe it was. There were two guys walking down the hallway, and they were talking. They said to a woman, oh, you look very nice today. And I jokingly said, no, be careful, you can't say that anymore. is that gender harassment? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, that wouldn't actually be on the list of possible gender harassing comments.
Thank God. They're
far more negative than that.
Okay.
But I do think that those kind of comments do make women hyper aware of their sexuality, right? So they're like, okay, wait, now you're not harassing me, but you're still talking about harassing me.
Right. And so, so you're implying that I have to be in eggshells, or you have to be in eggshells around me. That makes me uncomfortable. I get that.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone should feel like they have to be on eggshells. I think that's what's causing the hostility, is
right,
that feeling
right.
of being on the defensive. But those, like, joking about Me Too, I'd say, isn't really helping the women's movement. Although, you know, if you're not alone in making that comment. I probably hear it once or twice a day.
I'm sure you do, yeah. But tell me the importance of taming this gender harassment. This is a business show, and how that's good for business and good for organizations when they get that under control.
Yeah, so, you know, we know that having greater gender diversity improves organizational outcomes, and we know that when women feel higher levels of inclusion, not just having more diversity, but that leads to the best outcomes. So having increased gender harassment is going to result in decreased inclusion, and that means you're not getting the benefit of diversity, and women are more likely to leave your organization.
So
quit your job or quit the field altogether.
The good news is, the big story is, we've made great improvements when it comes to sexual harassment, and the other side of it is we've got work to do.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it. I think to really get the full benefits of gender diversity, you know, we still have work to do. I think there's increased awareness of the importance of the topic and just an overall increase in discussions about equality, but we're not done.
Stephanie Johnson, Associate Professor at the University of Colorado Boulder. Stephanie, it was nice to talk to you today. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks very much, Jen DeSalvo. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's not over. The alligator story continues. Well, it doesn't really. It's over. Seamus Toomey's in the studio, the editor-in-chief at Block Club Chicago. Seamus, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay,
appreciate
right. So if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't know about the alligator in Humboldt Park Lagoon?
Block Club Chicago broke that story. We can say that unequivocally.
How did that happen?
Because everyone doubted us for a couple hours.
Is that right?
And I was walking around the newsroom saying, no, that is an alligator. Like, I've seen the pictures. That is legit. Quit questioning me.
So I've done that where you're out in front on a story, and then you kind of wait for people to catch up, right? And it's hard to explain, but in a way, you're really happy that you're out in front, but on the other hand, you kind of want the reassurance to see other news outlets coming along, right?
Yeah, exactly. My reporter was out at the lagoon, and she said the news crew started showing up, and I was thinking, like, okay, I hope somebody else sees this, right. Too.
So you went from, it's an alligator, to God, I hope it's an alligator.
Witnesses say. we took the witnesses say after we saw it ourselves.
It was a lot of fun, and really one of the best summer stories in Chicago I could remember in a long time.
It really had a lot of the elements that make a great story. It had a cast of characters,
it was a
good length of a duration of a story. Another week and people would be rolling their eyes at this, but it sort of came and went, and
you guys were hawking t-shirts.
Yeah, my colleagues Jen Savella and Stephanie Lule came up with the idea of putting getting the local artist Ryan Duggan to do shirts, and they were extremely popular.
I'm glad you said that, because also John Williams was talking about it, and he connected with the museum in Humboldt Park. They sent him music, so it became sort of a neighborhood festival in many ways.
It was the perfect block club story because it was neighborhood. It had it all, and I'm really glad it's over.
Okay, so while we're talking in a way about waterways, and another good neighborhood story is this story in Andersonville, which is really phenomenal to me. So they need to do water main work, and the traditional way is to break up the ground, dig it all up, replace the entire main, and the sacrifice there are trees, sometimes 100-year-old trees. There's a better way. There are other cities, other suburbs around here who are doing it a better way, but Chicago's not. That's a story that you guys have been working on for a while. Explain that for me.
Right. The technology is called cured-in-place piping. Cured-in-place pipe, CIPP. Mm-hmm. Someone gave me the analogy that it's like putting a stent in your arteries. Right. Instead of going and ripping up your arteries, you can actually feed this through an artery and be much less invasive to prop up the outside of it. It's an inner lining from a water main. So your old 100-year-old water main that's fallen apart needs to be replaced, needs to be saved. You can slide this lining in there, and it molds around it and buys you another 50 to 80 years.
So they only need to dig a pit or something, once every 500 feet?
Right. They can build pits at these distances, and then it's only invasive there.
And they don't dig up the street. They don't have to cut down the trees. Is it more expensive?
It actually can turn out to be cheaper, 30 to 40% cheaper.
Okay, so why in the world is Chicago not doing it?
Well,
let me just say this. Evanston's doing it, right? Did I see Aurora? Is it Aurora, too? I don't know. Toronto's doing it.
Toronto's doing it.
It's pretty common.
Rockford's doing
Rockford,
it.
Rockford, I think.
Lombard's
right.
doing it. Okay. Arlington Heights is doing it. Chicago actually tried it a couple years ago, and that was sort of the crux of our reporter Jonathan Blue's story, was that they gave it a shot, but by several accounts, it was sort of a half-hearted effort.
They didn't really want it to succeed.
They did about 300 feet, and then they ruled that this wasn't that great.
And what is it they say? Well, we need to get the Illinois EPA permitting, but the fact is Chicago can permit themselves.
Right. The city's been pointing to the IEPA saying, well, we need to get their approval to do this so it's not too close to the sewer lines. You don't want the water and the sewer line too close to each other. The rules have changed since they were put in that close, so you gotta respect those rules. But you can get waivers to that, and the city has been saying that we have to get them going through the IEPA, but that's not exactly true. They could do this themselves. So it really raises the question, why aren't you giving this a better shot rather than coming into, say, Andersonville and cutting down 100-year-old trees,
right,
and really changing the look of the entire neighborhood?
I mean, you can love trees or not love trees, but the fact is that's a big aesthetic impact on a street. I've lived or lived adjacent to streets where they've lost all their trees. It's a huge change.
And we've talked to people, and they say how just demoralizing it is to see these trees that their kids have grown up under, and they're just coming in overnight when they find out they're coming down tomorrow just to do this, where there could be a better option, and it's being done on our neighbors just to the north.
So did we get a good answer? We don't really know yet. Maybe with your attention, That they'll revisit this?
Right. You know, obviously, Mayor Lightfoot's only been around for a couple months, so her office said, you know, we're willing to look into all possible ways to avoid sort of this tree carnage that we're seeing. And so we'll see. It could be change of administrations could mean a fresh new look at this.
Some of the stuff you get from Block Club Chicago. How are you guys doing business-wise? Good?
Oh, it's been fantastic. We're getting more subscribers, and that means we get to hire more reporters, and that brings in more subscribers, so it's working.
Fantastic. Check it out, you guys, Block Club Chicago. And when you do, you can read about another animal that they're championing, the Great Lakes Piping Plover.
Yeah, the bird that killed a music festival on the lakefront.
How about that? The Seamus Toomey, the editor-in-chief at Block Club Chicago. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Are you looking for an untapped market or thriving industry to invest your time and money into? More often than not, health is going to be in that category. And one of those companies is Anapneo Therapeutics, and they're finding ways to treat sleep apnea, which affects 22 million Americans. I'd say that's a pretty good-sized market. The president and director of the IIT Research Institute oversees the project, and instead of a face mask or bulky device, they're aiming to use a pill that treats the obstructive sleep condition. But sometimes health feels like something you just don't want to worry about and say, "Hey, buddy, I just can't manage you right now. I've got to indulge." Maybe that's why Culver's is opening up their third restaurant location in the city. Ravenswood will see a new Butterburger spot at 1819 Montrose Avenue after the Bronzeville and Portage Park locations have done well so far. I think it's safe to say the chain is doing overall pretty okay. I mean, they won the honor of top burger chain in the country this year, so it makes you wonder why there aren't even more locations next to their home state. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Tomorrow we're going to talk to the folks at the Auditorium Theater. I'm just reading about the history of it. I did not realize it was built as a response, sort of a unifying sort of structure after the Haymarket riots. It's got a great history in Chicago. They're doing something that I think is really unusual. It's almost a GoFundMe. They're asking for money. They're trying to raise $100,000 from us. And I don't know exactly why, what they need to do with the money, if they're not making the money on their own. But we'll talk to the folks from the auditorium about that tomorrow. Right now in the studio, Amy Guth is here, the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast from Crane Chicago Business. You can find it at WGNradio.com. Does it seem unusual to you that for-profit theater is asking for donations?
I think that's interesting. I have to learn more about that. I'm just learning that just now from you.
When I read it, I'm like, something doesn't seem, it just seems unusual. But
yeah, well, I don't know. I think sometimes a lot of organizations will do that, like, sponsor a brick in the sidewalk or something like that to give people a stake, or like, sponsor a chair or a row of chairs or something. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that lands.
Either way, great way to revisit or introduce everyone to just the Chicago treasure.
For sure, yeah.
A lot of people on the far south side and south suburbs think the Ford plant has become a Chicago treasure as well, right? I mean, it's an assembly plant. My dad worked at the stamping plant in Chicago Heights forever.
Oh, he did?
Sort of the sister plant. But there's just been this renaissance on Torrance Avenue.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that plant, the one that you mentioned where your dad worked, Ford has already spent $1 billion and hired 500 people between the far south side plant and the Chicago Heights stamping facility. So they've already put a lot of money into Chicago, and they're doing more.
And so now they say they're hiring another 450 workers?
That's right. So what they're going to do, there's 450 people that are in temp roles right now. They're going to make them full-time and then backfill with another 450 temp workers. Which, okay, sure, however you want to work that.
Right, so what you really could be saying is that they're adding 450 temp workers.
Pretty much.
Right. But if you're currently a temp worker, you're getting a full-time job.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what they're going to do. And they're investing $50 million to create a new assembly line for mostly hybrid vehicles. What I learned from this story, which I thought was really interesting, is normally traditional gas-powered vehicles and hybrid vehicles are created on the same line.
Okay.
Just because, hey, we've got the facility here, let's do all this together. But they've decided they can go a little faster if they just focus on hybrid. So that's kind of what this new facility is about, which is interesting. So they're going to make the Ford Explorer and the Lincoln Aviator mostly at this facility. And the Ford Explorer that another thing we've learned from this story is the Interceptor, which is the Ford Explorer that's outfitted specifically for law enforcement use.
Okay.
As soon as you say it, you're like, oh, yeah, I've seen that one.
Right.
Yeah, of course I've seen that one. Yeah. So it's got a lot of extra, you know, bells and whistles on it and some safety features for law enforcement. It'll also be made there, which is kind of interesting that that they're really devoting this this line to just hybrid vehicles and saying we can go much faster if all we're doing here is about hybrid.
Claire Bushy writes the story in Crane Chicago Business, and you'll talk about it on the Daily Gist. Is she your guest, or who's your guest today?
No, my guest today is Ari Bendersky, who is a food writer, and we had a conversation today about this swath of Chicago Avenue between Noble and California.
Okay.
That there have been a couple of restaurants there for a very long time, like Flo, which is a wonderful northern New Mexican food place, but all these new places are popping up and kind of breathing new life into some of the ones that have been there for a long time. So this little area is having a moment. We're kind of talking about, is that because we've seen so much happening in the Fulton Market and in Logan Square, and it's just natural those two things would meet in the middle, or is it something else? So we
check it out. It's the Daily Gist. Amy Guth, thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.